Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind.
The Law Report with Michael Motsoeneng Bell, Kaya FM 95.9.
What are we talking about on the Law Report tonight? We're talking about family homes. You know that this is a Gauteng issue. Everybody who is from Gauteng, lives in Gauteng, knows a thing or two about family homes and the problems that they present. And that's what we're talking about this evening. And as always, you can give me a ring, 086-000-0959. I got some great experts for you. All right. Welcome to the Law Report. Before we start our show, many thanks to Cindy Fonsale. She's back with you again tomorrow. And you can look forward to yet another show from her. But tonight we're talking about family homes. So I'm joined in studio by a man whom, when last I saw him, was called Mr. Ngobizita Mlilo, and now he's called Advocate Ngobizita Mlilo. So if I don't refer to him by his more recently acquired title, I'm sure he'll forgive me. And Dr. Mlilo, good evening.
Mike, you must behave yourself.
So I don't know, man. You know, this attorney life, not for me. You want to be an advocate. No, but congrats. Yeah?
Can I exercise my right to remain silent?
You know what people say to me? You know what people say to me? Just on a side note. People say to me, Michael, when are you going to become an advocate? And I go, why? So you know, because traditionally advocates is like the pinnacle of it. Which you know.
Well, they ask you, are you a lawyer or an advocate?
But congrats, man. It's, you know, the side bar was nice, was good while it lasted, but it's gone now. Have fun at the bar.
Thank you very much, Mike. Thank you very much. Can I sit down?
And I guess we'll be seeing you not less on the Law Report. Will we?
You can have me on speed dial.
Like, let's not have change. Let's change it, but not your presence on the Law Report. But anyway, thank you, my brother, and congrats. And also joining me for the very first time from organization called ProBono.org, and you're gonna know a little bit more about this organization because it does some amazing work, some of which, no doubt, you can benefit from just keeping your ears peeled and listening to some of the work that they do. Ms. Tenolo Masha, she's a head of Housing, Refugee and Community Advice Office. Madam, good evening and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tenolo wrote a paper on a position paper on family houses, and this is significant because we're always talking about this, these family houses, and the conversations that we've been having on the Law Report about this subject has been from different dimensions, but never one as academically focused as this, where just to show how big an issue it is, there's a position paper written on it by Tenolo Masha. But she didn't do it alone. She did it in conjunction with the University of Birmingham and what we call the associate professor, Mr. Maxime Bolt. Maxime, good evening, and thank you so much for joining us via Skype. Hello, Maxime.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Welcome to the Law Report, and thank you so much for joining us on Skype.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, so I guess a good starting point, and I don't want to miss this point, Tenolo. You've written the position paper. Let's talk about who is ProBono.org,
right.
And I want to get to where Afropolitans can get this position paper, because I don't just want to leave it there. I want to leave Afropolitans with a sense of being empowered.
Absolutely. So ProBono.org is a non-profit organization. We are a law clinic, a registered law clinic. We operate as a legal clearinghouse, one of the very few in the continent. And the primary objective of the organization is to make pro bono services available to communities that are in need. And we do this by partnering with the private legal profession. So my esteemed colleague here, who has recently acquired this very profound status of being counsel, will be receiving an email from me where I'm saying to him, counsel, you are required for pro bono assistance. So our work is premised around ensuring access to justice and using and harnessing the skills of the private legal profession to ensure that communities, especially marginalized communities, have access to the courts, have access to the justice system.
And this paper, I mean, I guess a starting point is, what was it about this issue of family houses that was so important that made you write this? And I think it's an important one because it sort of gives us an idea. And for you at home, Afropolitan, I have Lila, who you know very well, and my two guests, ready and able to take any calls that you might have regarding any issue you might have regarding your family home. And the number to dial, as always, is 086-000-0959. And I must tell you, you want to call us, the sooner the better. If you phone us 5 minutes before the time, it will not help you nor us because we will not be able to adequately deal with your question. Mm. So what was it that got you to a point where you say, you know, we got to team up with the University of Birmingham and write about family houses?
So maybe just to mention that probono.org had a long-standing relationship with Dr. Bolt. He had attended, through his own research about inheritance and kinship, he was attending to our master's, Johannesburg Master's Office help desk, where he was trying to understand how, you know, the law intertwines with kinship and inheritance. And this concept kept on coming
up. Kinship? As in the royalty or kinship?
Oh, kinship.
Which one?
As in how we relate, how we are related.
Sure, sure.
As individuals, and how that relation then translate in terms of succession and who gets what.
For sure.
So obviously the master's office, where the administration of deceased estates would have been, you know, the centered point to get an understanding of these issues. And it was through his own observation that he, you know, realized that there is this concept. Meanwhile, we were also dealing with it from a legal perspective. We at that point had engaged a couple of stakeholders that we knew were part of the profession but also had historic knowledge of how this concept had developed over time. So it became like a natural progression where we, it just, you know, when you talk about research and casework, there's a point where you realize that there's one consistent theme that comes up, and this concept, the family house, kept coming up. It kept on coming up in eviction matters. It kept on coming up in matters related to administration of deceased estates. It kept on even coming up with the deeds office work that we do, where we try to get conveyances in to come and assist with doing transfers for deceased estates, where people would literally say, yes, I've inherited my grandmother's house, but this is a family house, so please transfer to the family. And then the law says,
yeah, but the word family house or family home, it's not a legal word. It's not a, you know, so there's no law that I know of that sort of says family house this way and that way.
Exactly.
So put differently, a house in Randburg, for all intents and purposes, would it not be the same as a house in Soweto?
It would be, and it should be. The only difference here is when you're dealing with it from a land registration perspective, it's not catered for, let me use that word. And because the use of this word and how people identified with these properties was predominantly in the black urban townships, and that's why we concentrated the research there to try and understand where does this concept actually come from and how has it developed over time and why is it, you know, how it interfaces with the current land registration and also just the current land systems in the country and how the law does or doesn't actually recognize it.
If I can bring in Maxime here, in your paper, the possession paper, you almost connect the relationship that we have to these family houses to something that we bring from the rural areas, and you use much more fancier words than are in my question. But you sort of tie the relationship that we as urban dwellers have to these family homes as ones that we would have had historically.
Yeah. So what we found, I mean, in my own research and on Tsonolo's side in casework, is that, I mean, what lies behind this concept of the family house is two different things that really become difficult to disentangle today. On the one hand, yeah, there is an older idea that has continued and that, of course, we often associate with rural areas, which is the home as something with collective family entitlement.
Sure.
And as something that is much more than an asset, is a kind of materialization of kinship, is a place to return to, is a place that is cross-generational, is a place of the ancestors. But what is also clear is that this got tied up in urban townships with the particular history of housing during apartheid. Mm. So, of course, in black townships, housing was overwhelmingly rental housing. And this was administered on the basis of permits to reside that were known as family permits. And those permits, of course, gave a particular kind of official tone to the idea of the house as a family house. And over time, the two ideas of family house, the idea of the family house that pointed back and pointed across into a sense of rural custom and rural history, and on the other hand, the way that a highly racially divided system administered housing. These two came together. But one thing that in the paper, in the position paper, and in the research, we're really keen to emphasize is that often people, when they think about custom, assume that we're talking about rural parts of the country. Mm. Whereas in this case, what we really see are popular norms that should be understood as customary but are distinctly urban because of the particular history they've had and the way that this intertwines with the way that apartheid affected housing.
I find, you know, the particularly the first proposition of how this ties into our custom, I find it interesting because there's another debate parallel to this in regard to rural homes.
Yes.
And there the conversation is about communal ownership. Mm. Or, you know, I don't, it's actually not even a good way of saying it because there is no ownership in the private law sense as we understand it.
Yes.
It's just the right to occupy.
Mm.
And there, that villages and corners and Eskotinskabanban, Gwasbanban, it happens not just in, you know, in all provinces.
Mm.
Where families have certain, you know, have certain rights over a certain part, and nobody claims that as their private dwelling. And I'm wondering how, you know, on the one hand, that arrangement is not free of criticism. In other words, nobody's looking at the rural setup and saying, well, it's great that kings and chiefs are the owners and holders of these property rights. There are those amongst us who think, yeah, maybe not, I want to trade, I want to be able to, you know, before, you know, I want to be able to sell it, et cetera. Are we borrowing, or should we be borrowing from some of the lessons that one experiences in regard to these rural homes into the treatment of what we then call family homes in urban areas?
Well, that's a very good question. I think in the paper we deal with that issue. Mm. Where we look at what the economics and how they actually feed into what is the quagmire in trying to get a sort of a legal kind of definition for this concept.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely one of the considerations are around if you are to define a property as a family house, what would then be the economic consequences of that definition?
Mm-hmm.
Especially because the concept itself seeks to exclude the property from ever being, you know, the sole property of one individual. And obviously, you know, flowing from that, the property would then not be subject to being bonded or being used as security for any kind of financial transactions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one area that has not been explored. I think with the work that's going to continue in the paper is obviously looking at how would in recognizing this concept actually affect property markets, especially in the black urban areas where there is almost two realities that exist.
Mm-hmm.
One that is ensuring that there's a space and a property that is accommodating family members that would not be able to secure properties. And on the other hand is also looking at, you know, how do we utilize that property to bring some sort of, you know, economic development to the family itself.
And another thing, Lila, you can jump in right after this one. Another thing, Maxime, if I can maybe put this one to you, when you look at how we were able to sustain family homes in rural areas, it's because of, you know, patent discrimination against women insofar as their rights to occupy and sort of carry forward the possession and ownership of those properties. And I think one of the immediate difficulties that one faces in respect of these family homes is, you know, you call it a family home, and yes, it's the Bill residence, that's all good and well, but Bill marries a woman from Tembu, and Bill dies, and it was a family, but now the former Tembu is now family, and she wants to remarry, and here comes, God forbid, Mlilo.
And you know I'm going to take it. Up north.
And here comes Mlilo from nowhere, and suddenly family home, or even the concept of family, has had so many variables to it, because there's Bill Mtembu and now Mlilo. And now my family, of course, would be, in all likeliness, not be welcomed by the Mlilo family. How do we overcome that, if at all an attempt has been made?
Well, I mean, of course, I mean, an attempt in relation to the urban settings that we're talking about, attempts haven't really been made. Mm. So this is really open terrain, and we are definitely interested in trying to understand better and work through the complexities of how this would work in practice. And we're not suggesting that we have that all figured out. What we our starting point is that the family house as an entity, as a popular norm, needs to be taken seriously, given that under the Constitution, custom is supposed to be given equivalent weight to common law, so customary law and common law. And if we take this seriously as urban custom, then there is an argument for ensuring that this concept is formally recognized and legally protected. As far as what would happen in relation to the marginalization of vulnerable people, this is something we're particularly concerned with, and we've thought particularly hard about. Actually, what we have found, and what we think, is that, I mean, in fact, informally, outside of the law, family houses already exist. People administer their own living situations in terms of collective family houses, essentially outside of legal categories. And what we think, and what we hope, is that actually by bringing a concept like this inside the law and under the Constitution, would offer ways to think about how to make it constitutionally compliant. Mm-hmm. How, in fact, precisely to work with definitions of the family that do not systematically exclude women or particular children, for example. So really, it's the problem that we're dealing with is not simply would the concept marginalize certain people, but does the concept already marginalize certain people, and rather would incorporating it into legal recognition actually help mitigate that?
Mike, and maybe let me also direct my thoughts to you, because as I was preparing for the show, I realized that there was a lot of litigation around these houses, and when you read the facts around the litigation, it's almost the same. The facts are almost identical. You're only changing the names and the characters and the address, and almost to suggest that this concept of a family house has become almost a legal term in and of itself, because the way in which the legislation then deals with who actually owns the house is not how we traditionally understand in the strict Western Roman Dutch law understanding of what constitutes an ownership of a house. Mm. Because a house can be registered in a person's name, and then the tribunal or the administrator makes a determination that, notwithstanding that the house is registered in someone else's name, actually it's not his house. and the house must be transferred to a different person. So much so that I think that there is room for the accommodation of both black people continuing to live their African customary law as far as the ownership of the house as a family, mm. rather than being given to a particular person. In other words, this person is simply holding in trust for the family, and also accepting the Roman Dutch concept of individual ownership, because during the process of family negotiations about who owns the property, the family is entitled to say, we are in fact divesting our ownership and giving it to a particular person, and from then onwards, the process moves from there. So I think that the two can actually reconcile, and I don't think that there is need for panic, because families, in terms of the existing legislation and the inquiry that is required as far as ownership is concerned, families have a choice to decide that this property will not be owned by anyone, but it will continue to be held in trust by one person on behalf of everyone, or can make a decision that this house is now going to be owned by this person to the exclusion of everyone else.
If I can maybe jump in there, that has been primarily the source of the problem, that entire process. And what happened is that when township properties were moving from the system of permits into individualized title, the Department of Human Settlements, I think, was alive to these dynamics, that, you know, there's families that are residing in these properties, and there's people who are custodians or people who take care of the property or take care of the family, and you know, having to convert that system into a title deed might be, you know, might require some sort of wordplay. So initially there was something called a family rights agreement, where one individual will get title. So the property would be registered in Bill's name. We, as the children of whoever, you know, if we are all siblings, all three of us are siblings, the property would be registered in Bill's name, because on nomination from us, he's the one who's been taking care of the family. In terms of African custom, he's the eldest child, and he's the one who has that responsibility. We then sign a family rights agreement that says that Bill...
And that's not registered.
So this is where the issue is, okay. In terms of the legal provision of this concept. The family rights agreement is not registered because the deeds registry system doesn't accommodate this kind of, you know, there's a habitatio, there's the user frank that says, me as an individual, I've got a right to this property. But the concept as we understood it and as we've worked on this paper is that this right is not actually for one person. It's a right that survives me and moves on after I pass on to my descendants and to their descendants.
So, and to your spouse.
And we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that spouse issue. So the issue was that even from an administrative
process. So much so that Bill's children can't directly inherit from that property.
Yes. So the issue then became that Bill then gets married. We've signed a family rights agreement. Mm. Bill gets married, and this always happens. Bill dies. And then when Bill dies...
Cause unknown. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we continue our discussion. But remember, the show is not for me, it's for you. So you give us a call, and these guys here are more than happy to take any of your calls. The number to dial, 086-00-00959. We're back after this.
Know your rights. Know the law. The Law Report with Michael Mtswenning Bill.
Welcome back to The Law Report. I'm still in conversation talking about family homes, and we're going to be unpacking what that actually means, what that actually means to you as a legal right and obligation, whatever the case might be. And I'm joined in the studio by Advocate Ngozi Tandula. I'm getting used to that. As well as Tena Lomasha, she's the head of housing, refugee and community advice at probono.org, and associate professor Dr. Maxime Bolt. He's from the University of Birmingham, and together with Tenola, they've written a position paper on family houses, and we're trying to understand how some of the challenges are proposed to be suggested, because this is certainly much needed insight. As Mlelo has pointed out, there are so many cases currently underway about these family houses. You can imagine when we're talking about some houses, I mean, Soweto was built 60s, 50s? around that time, right? Mm-hmm. And you can imagine how many people have died since, mm-hmm. and how many issues arise as a result. So that's our conversation tonight. And you might want to be buying a house in Soweto, or not just Soweto. I mean, there's so many townships in the East Rand. From it's a huge problem, and it affects us specifically as Afropolitan. So do give us a call, 086-00-00959. Let's take a call, and I know you wanted to exhaust the thought that you had. We'll come back to it, Tenolo. But let's take a call from Paul, calling from Kempton Park. Hello, Paul.
Good evening to your panel and to you, Mike. I would have actually liked to hear what Tenolo was going to say regarding the marriage portion, but be that as it may.
We'll insist she tells us. She finishes.
Okay. So my question regarding this family housing thing is, because we technically don't have like a title deed, right? Mm. What happens in the situation where you've got a grandmother who's had two children, and the two children, only one of them has a son, and the other child, well, both of them have died as well as the grandmother. Mm. And now we've got an aunt who's actually a cousin to the grandmother living in this family house. Would she be entitled to use this house, considering that she's not technically a proper descendant, because she's not the child of the grandmother, and the grandson is around, but because he doesn't have the power to go and remove this aunt, like, how would we assist? Where would we go? Does the grandson even have the right to go and ask the aunt to move out, because she's not a descendant? And the grandson would be the descendant of the grandmother, who's in fact also died interstate. So there hasn't been a will, and would this use of this house actually fall into an interstate or interstate kind of death?
Mm-hmm. I think very important question, isn't it? Because here you have somebody who's not a direct descendant is probably a niece to the grandmother. Mm. I'm right, Tempo. She would have been your aunt is your grandmother's niece.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's like on the side. If you look at interstate succession, nieces and nephews don't ordinarily inherit, or at least not immediately. Mm. How does this play out?
So maybe I'm going to have two answers for this. Mm-hmm. And one would be currently in terms of what the legal provisions are. Mm-hmm. And then the other one would obviously look at what the customary provisions would be. So she said something very important. The house does not have a title deed. Mm. That means that... Sorry, Mpo, where is the property situated?
915. So it is within the Gauteng... It's in a township in Randfontein on the West Rand.
Okay, so depending on what the situation is with regards to the title deed, there would be an inquiry that is done by either Human Settlements or the local government department, the Housing Human Settlements Department, who would then have to do an inquiry on who has the rights to get title over that property. Mm. And this now becomes the process that is strictly looking at land occupation. Mm. So it almost cuts the cord in terms of family links, because now it's the state trying to regularize a person's occupation of a property. And what we found is that there have been litigation on whether or not a person who has familial rights to a property is entitled to claim a property once that property title is registerable to an individual. So that might be a matter where it might be subject to interpretation, where the current occupant can make a claim for the property in terms of saying, I've lived here for X amount of years, I'm entitled to this property in terms of whatever provisions are at play. But the family, and more specifically the grandson, can also submit a claim to say, well, actually, this property used to be my grandmother's.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I think
so they can both submit a claim, so but who's likely to succeed?
So what has been happening in these adjudications is that the judgments are almost like popcorn. it's entirely almost discretionary.
Extremely.
So you can have exactly the same facts giving you almost a different result from an adjudicative, because the decision is administrative in nature. And if you are unhappy with the investigation that has been done at that level, your recourse is to approach the High Court on appeal, not necessarily on review.
Exactly.
That's where even the difference is. So the issue of family, like she's indicated, might actually not even be the most determinative factor. Even if you're not a direct descendant of the person, the concept of family is broader than that, because you can claim that you have a right to the transfer of the title by virtue of that you are occupying the property, or they would go back into the history to look at the permit. On that permit, who was listed on that permit, and who has a relationship with anyone of the persons that are making a claim on? So I think
I finish your line of thought.
So I think the issue to actually take home is if people who have any relationship with these family houses, the earlier you get this thing resolved, the better.
Speaking of that, I mean, prescription, we know that there's also a prescription. If you have a claim, there's a time within which you got to pursue it. So auntie's been living there for 10 years. When do you then say, oh, actually, I'm the direct descendant of the previous owner or occupier of this property?
No, the question in this respect will not be a question of prescription, because it's an attempt to correct years and years. So prescription does not... what features, where you are going as far as laying a claim within a reasonable time, is not on the person that is actually in the occupation of the property, is in respect of the person that wants to make a claim on the property.
Yeah. Mm.
So if your conduct demonstrates an unreasonable delay in instituting a claim, then, because when you are querying this, it actually has to be reviewed in terms of administrative law. So you have to follow whatever is prescribed in PAJA.
As 180 far as, days.
That your conduct must be reasonable.
Yeah.
Your conduct must be reasonable in you making a claim on the...
But I mean, even that is another problem. You spoke about family agreement. Mm. So I don't think that the aunt just dropped in there.
I was about exactly.
There would have been some kind of like, you know,
arrangement.
And then 17 years down the line, meanwhile, the grandchild is young probably at that point. Mm. And meanwhile, now he's not 18. He didn't just become 18 when Mpo phoned on his behalf.
Yeah. Mm.
So he might have just, you know, when somebody's living in the house, you know you have it, but you don't want to start a fight or whatever the case might be. And then you're just living because wherever he might be comfortable. But when he's now 30 and he realizes that actually houses out there are very expensive, he's like, hang on, I actually got a house there that I could have claimed 12 years ago and I didn't, and now I'd like to claim it.
Mm. So maybe let me just throw another aspect that we need to be mindful of, is that not all the properties are registerable to an individual.
Mm.
So you have instances when the actual township itself has not been registered, and that basically means that no individual title can be given to a person, and that does pose a delay and causes a delay. So we are anticipating that we will still be having this conversation about RDP houses. I mean, people get RDP houses and they stay in them for 10, 15 years without getting a title.
Mm.
And in that space of time, deaths occur and people move in, people make arrangements, yet there isn't any legal protections that are available for those particular arrangements. So I think in this instance, the question would be, what was the arrangement, the initial arrangement with the aunt having moved in the first place? I certainly don't think she dropped in and decided, oh, this house is okay. You know,
but I mean, it could have been a legitimate one, as would be the case, to say, you know, come stay here, you're still struggling for now, you've just divorced your husband, and he's chased you out of the house, so come stay here for a while. But a while is now 15 years down the line.
It doesn't change anything. It can be 20, it can be 100 years, as long as the occupation was on a particular set of an agreement, that agreement remains. So
and then another problem arises. The people that made that agreement are not there. The grandmother is gone, and here comes poor grandchild awakening to the fact that he may or may not own land. I think that there's a lot of work that's going to be needed for certainty. Mm. You got to create certainty, because if you have an occupier suddenly enjoying a greater right than somebody who through succession.
So maybe let's do this, Mike.
Yeah. Let's not hog it. Let's not hog it. We'll come back.
I just wanted to make this point to say, for what it is worth, try and establish the basis upon the occupation of the property as it is now.
Okay, Mpo, you're still there. Can you help us quickly? Why is the aunt living there?
So the aunt actually moved in when the youngest son died, which was about 3 years ago, and it wasn't through any agreement. So it was basically, there's nobody living here, so I'm going to move in there with my children. And she's technically just moved in and sort of claimed the house.
How old is this grandchild?
So the grandson currently is 34, and he wants to.
I mean, 3 years, that shouldn't be bad. 3 years? No, no, no. I mean, I don't have to wrestle you and race you to the property. You move in, and I'm like, yeah, okay, let me see how this goes. Surely.
My question is, where was the grandson? I mean, we are referring to him as if he might. He's not a minor, certainly, and he's a person who, if he had a vested interest in this property, might have or should have, you know, from a reasonable perspective, taken some sort of initiative to lay claim to this property. So the other question is, you know,
but I'm with the grand. I'm with the brother. I think that if your brother gets lawyers like these in the studio, you come get me.
I'll remember that, Mike, and I'll hold you to it.
Lorraine, hello from Soweto.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
I'm fine. My question is different.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother owned the house. Then she passed away. Then my mom owned the house. Mm-hmm. It's three of us at home. Then my younger brother decided to sell the house without our consent. So what do you do?
How long ago, Lorraine?
2012.
When did you find out?
I only found out last year when I went, because the arrangement was we'll put those people in there so that they can rent out the house.
So you thought they are renting?
Yes.
But Mike,
because we had our own houses.
For sure.
But now we don't have our houses. I don't have a house. And the kids are older now. They need their place.
Yeah.
Now I went there to visit the people. I said, okay, now I'll come back home. They said, no, we bought the house from your brother.
They say, well, who are you?
I went to the housing department at Joburg,
mm-hmm.
and they showed me that those people bought the house in 2012.
Okay.
So maybe if I can jump in there.
Mm-hmm.
Our process, I'm going to say this because this is my position, our process in administration of deceased estates, especially in deceased estates where the values of the properties are below 250,000 currently, is somewhat creating and contributing to the problem because there isn't proper oversight over the process. So a person can literally go to the master's office and say, hey, listen, my mom has died. I'm the only child.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of authority. I go and I sell the property. And there isn't anything that is going to alert all my other siblings that transaction has taken place.
Yeah.
And I'm suspecting, and I'm sorry for jumping ahead, that this might be the case in this instance.
And I think you might be spot on. Lila, you wanted to say something?
No. It was curious to me that she said my mother owned the house, mm-hmm. and then my sister then owned the house, then she owned the house. I'm curious to understand how this transfer of ownership happened.
Oh, you mean like the title deed?
Whatever she meant.
Yeah. Lorraine?
No, the title deed was, the house was in my grandmother's name.
Oh, okay. Mm. And then your grandmother had a title deed?
Yes. Then she passed away.
Mm.
Then because we were staying there with my mom alone.
Mm.
Then my mom, she's the one who had the title deed in her name because she was the only.
Yeah. So,
and from the mother to her sister, there was a transfer of the title deed again.
No, it didn't go to the sister. It went from grandmother to mother.
Yeah.
And then
sold by brother.
And then mother dies, brother sells.
No, he can't do that.
Yeah. So it looks like Senator suspects there might be fraud at play, Lorraine, because for your brother to have been able to sell the property, he would have had to say that you don't exist. And because this happened 2012, but you found out last year, it means you must yesterday try to do something about it.
Can I dive into it?
Yeah.
Quickly. Sorry, Mlilo. I first things first is she needs to go to the master's office with the death certificate of her mother and the grandmother and pull out the latest date files for both deceased estates. That will tell you who got the letters of authority, what happened with the transactions. That from there, we have a help desk. Probono.org has a help desk at the master's office because we realize that there's a need for people to try and get what they can do from a legal position to try and help themselves.
Yeah, she's correct, but I think the case law says you must go and exhaust internal remedies first before you go to the High Court to seek a reversal of that transfer. So she needs to go and lay a claim at the local the local investigators first, who then make a determination to say we don't have the power to reverse the transfer. She takes that
local investigators at the Registrar of Deeds.
No, at the, what is it? These ones who are
okay. You think about it, and we take a break. Maybe okay. You need a break too. We're back after this.
Know your rights. Know the law. The Law Report with Michael Mtswenning Bill.
Welcome back. We continue our conversation talking about family homes, and I want to go straight to the lines. I know that we got some hanging questions that we'll revert back to. Chi Chi from Ridderport, good evening.
Hello, how are you?
Well, and you?
I'm good, thank you. I have two questions,
mm-hmm.
Okay. One question is, my mom is currently living at a family house where she grew up, that's her parents' house, okay? Mm-hmm. She's 72 years old, that's one. And then the title deed of that house, when the change happened, because obviously it's a municipality house, mm-hmm. It's in Orlando West.
Mm-hmm.
So when the change happened, they then put the title in my late uncle's name, who has passed on for like 10 years now. That's mm-hmm. the other situation. And then what is currently happening is, then my mom went to the master. She got a sort of like an executor's something.
Yeah, letter of executorship.
Mm-hmm. Yes. She's got death with her. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to change the title, because my uncle, obviously it's a family home where my mom was on the permit, and then one of my other sisters was also on the permit because she used to live with my grandmother at the same house. But what we're trying to do is to amend the title, is to change the title holder to my mother. However, it's becoming difficult because then my mom, then they require all these other documents. Like, we have my uncle's death certificate, which is not a problem. But now they're looking for a will. They're looking for all other form of documentation, which we cannot produce, because my uncle has always been at home with my grandmother, and he's never owned any other house. He's always lived at the family house. So now he's passed on, and my mom is now living at the house, taking care of it, looking after it,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time, the title is not in her name. So I'm trying to find out if there's any other way besides producing... Is there?
So you're asking if there's a double up?
No. <It's a letter. laughs> I wish there was a double up. I wish. If the letter from the master, the title did, and my uncle's death certificate, is sufficient for us to change the title to her name, because you know what, she's 72 years old. I still have a sister that lives with her there. And we don't want to be in a situation where my mother passes and now we can't actually change it anymore to my sister type of situation.
I got you. Help me here quickly. Yeah. So it was your grandmother had your mother and your uncle. Did she have any other children?
No, they all passed on.
So,
there were other children.
Did those other children have kids?
Yeah, it's my sister. So it was my uncle, my mom, and one of my elder sisters who used to live with my grandmother,
yeah.
who were then on the permit.
Mm.
Because there was a permit, and on that permit, they were on the permit, which includes my mother. My sure. mother, my sister.
We got you. If you talk uncle. Some more, you're going to confuse us because. But we got the gist of it there. So let's try to get you an answer, Chi Chi.
Yeah. So this is obviously a transfer from a deceased estate.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's an interstate estate, obviously now we have to do a family tree where we check who were. Because the title deed was in the uncle's name, ultimately. That's mm-hmm. the estate that we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
The considerations would be who is surviving uncle. And if it's indeed her mother, if she's the sole heir, then it's
easy. But what if she's not?
But what if she's not? And I'm getting the sense that she might not be. And maybe that is why the conveyancers would then ask for a number of documentation to say, we need this to try and see who is entitled to final registration or inheritance.
But understanding the history, and you talked about family agreements, understanding the history and complexity where the uncle could very well have just been a custodian.
Exactly.
How then do you deal with it in terms of trying to locate ownership? Do you start from the holder of the title, that's the uncle, or do you start with the grandmother? Because if the uncle has kids, and you locate the tree from the uncle, then it means that the grandmother who lives there doesn't have title to it.
Exactly.
Where do you start? What do you take into account? Understanding the dynamic that you have said in the preamble to the show.
So I think the question here is, and this is why we did the position papers, that the current systems, which is the administrative system and the issue of land registration, is not accommodating of what people are or how people relate to the property. If we are to do this transfer in terms of what is currently legislatively provided for, it would exclude a number of people who have, in my opinion, a vested right to the property. And I guess the question would then be, how do we then take these kinds of matters and actually use them as forms of litigation to advocate for change, to say that, you know, our current system, our current land registration system is not accommodating of a few concepts that are actually alive and aligned to how we use and access property in South Africa. So, there isn't a perfect question. We get this question a lot. I certainly get this question a lot, where people are saying, okay, we hear you want so-and-so who is related to the uncle, but what about us? What about the fact that we view and we have used this property over a long period of time as a family house? How do we then get accommodated from a legal perspective?
I mean, Dr. Bolt, any thoughts on this question? It looks like the more questions we try to answer, the more trouble we encounter.
Well, I mean, so first of all, it's important to say that I can't hear the callers in.
Right.
So I can't respond to the details there. But as far as this kind of the ever-increasing complexity that you're referring to, I mean, absolutely. But that's already true. And it's at the moment, it's true partly because of this huge gap between quite a restrictive set of rules in the law and popular norms.
Mm.
So on the one side, you've had kind of attempts at accommodation, like Sinolo described, with family agreements, which ran into their own trouble in that they involve placing habitatios and so on.
I mean, they seem pragmatic at first. You know, when you're entering it and we're all alive, it seems like a pragmatic thing to do, to say, brother X, you stay here, we'll register it for convenience in your name. But ultimately, it leaves a legacy of trouble, doesn't it? And that's really the concern. Let me just take another call, because typically our calls start to ring when they are not supposed to be ringing. We like them early, but we get most of them late in the show. Eddie from Davidton, good evening.
Yeah, me too.
Eddie?
How are you?
Good. How are you, Eddie?
No, I'm good. I've got a question here.
Yes, hit me fast with your question.
Okay, my mother left me with a house, and somehow, you know how things happen in marriage, I ended up registering the house in my wife's name. She was concerned that what if you die and your family comes back? Now, all of a sudden, things are not good in marriage. She wants to kick me out of the house. This is her house. Why are you laughing?
It's the advocate, and some court made him an advocate.
My mother is still alive, by the way. And during the process of transferring the house, she didn't even buy it. We just get a figure with the lawyer to say, but I must put a figure here. How much are you buying it for? She said, just put down 40,000, madam. She put down 40,000. What are my chances of getting the house?
But wait, no, why did you register it? So you were registering it in her name. Why? Because I think that's your reason to that. Your answer to that question is going to be very important. If you're saying I was registering it in her name to frustrate other claimants, unless those claimants come, huh?
No, there were no claimants. I've got my sister. My mother actually bought a house for my sister and gave me the house that we used to stay in.
Okay.
And said, you keep your house, your brother keeps this one. So out of concern, the woman sees people fighting over houses, and one person was never interested in property, you know,
yeah,
it had nothing to me. I was just happy in the marriage, and I said, fine, let's just put it in your name in case I die, anything happens.
Yeah.
And now she comes to
But okay, let's see if we can help you in reverse. Are you married to her?
Yes, we are married.
Are you married in community of property?
Out of community of property. Now, what I want to do is to get the house registered in my kids' names. You've got two kids.
Let's see if Tenolo can help you quickly.
Can I ask a question? Obviously, it's registered in both your names, right?
No, her name.
No, her name.
Yeah.
Okay. I exit.
Yeah, I think
my mother is still alive to testify that you never bought the house.
No, you made your bed, you must leave.
I know.
I think, you got a tough case, to be honest with you. But I mean, take legal advice. You know, what I like about the law is that you can get a very bright lawyer who can try to find a way out.
Oh, really? Okay, good luck.
Yes, and then try not to get a pessimistic one. Make him leave. I'm afraid, you know, and you can't toy around with registration. So she was saying to you, look, register it in my name so that I don't have trouble. But implicit in her question and her concern was creating a concern for you, because then it means that you were then going to assume the trouble, and you seem to have assumed that trouble. And I think that's sort of the conundrum you find yourself in. Hopefully you can sort of pierce through it and try to, you know, get some other answer, try to get your mother to fight the fight for you. But it looks like you are in a bit of a tight spot. Kebi or Kebi from Soweto?
Hello.
Hi, Kebi.
So, actually I wanted to remain anonymous, but I guess it's too late.
There's lots of Kebis out there, so don't worry.
Okay, first of all, I've got a problem with the fact that we call our homes family homes.
Yeah.
I've got a huge problem with that. I don't know, call me a millennial. I'm still young. I'm 27. Okay, so I'm going to try to cut it short. My grandfather passed away in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
He had a will, left the house for my mother and my sister and I. My mom passed away, sadly, as well, 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Now the house remains to my sister and I, but my sister moved out, got a job elsewhere. So I stayed alone as the last born, decided to take care of the house, only to find out months later that the house was in debt. My mom took a loan and held the house as assurance.
Yeah.
So now we're stuck in this loan.
Okay.
Next thing, uncle decides to come back home. Uncle, that is my mother's brother, knowing very well that the house is mine and my sister's, but for the fact that it's a family home, we can't do anything about it. He wants to come back home. He's got nowhere else to go to. We can't kick him out. We've got this loan that we have to pay that will take us almost 10 to 20 years to pay it off. SA Home Loans, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that, but SA Home Loans is refusing to cut it off because it's a loan. And we have to pay it off, and they're going to repossess the house.
Got you.
Our mother had the title deed. My sister is the executor. At the end of the day, I'm the one that ends up paying for the house. With my uncle staying there, I had to move out because I didn't want to stay with my uncle.
Right.
You know?
And
not
the question?
For freedom, but
we got
because
the fact?
I just... Yeah.
Well, okay. Hit us with your quick question so we can help you in the 3 minutes that remain.
Pardon?
What's the question?
The question is right now, so we've got this loan.
Yeah.
What do we do? Do we contact... We've spoken to SA Home Loan. They want their money. There's no double up. There's no shortcuts, I know, but... What else can we do?
Was the loan not insured? Because a lot of the times when you take up a loan, I'm not saying this is the case here. A lot of the time when these guys give you loans, and I'm not talking about SA Home Loans, I'm just talking about lenders in general, they also sell insurance on the debt itself.
That's the thing. My mom had loans. After her passing, I went to the banks, and that was all sorted out. But with this one specifically, and they're refusing to give us answers. I think because my sister is the executor, so she might have all the answers. But I'm really stuck in this, and I'm really trying to get the answers that why wasn't it insured? Why can't you let
your customers? And then are you sure that it's worth paying the loan? Because sometimes a loan could exceed the value of the property. And as you've... Have you, like I said,
what I don't like, it's the family home. Our rituals, everything, we want to do them at home. And there's this uncle that we can't kick him out. Where is he going to go to?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's a tough one.
So, yeah.
Sorry, I'm not sure if we helped you at all.
And I think the debt is the debt of the state. Mm. So the state must be wound up properly. And if the SA Home Loan gave the debt, they must come and make a claim on the state. Mm. And it appears that they've already called on debtors to come forth. And I don't know whether or not they came on time before the state was.
But I mean, she doesn't know, Anonymous doesn't know what the status is, because that would have been helpful to know what the executor knows.
Yeah.
Because then you could make it a little bit difficult for the loaning company.
Yes.
To say, no, actually, here's a queue, join it.
Yes.
But it also depends on the nature of the agreement. If the house is used. But hang on. Gabby, just check this, and that might be very important. If they wanted to burden the house and use it as surety, they would have had to register a bond over it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And for them to have a preferential right or any enforceable right post the death, if it's like some private agreement that they didn't subsequently register, they'd have to join the queue and be like any other creditor. So you might find that you have some kind of a way out there. So just check that out. We run out of time, but I hate leaving matters outstanding. It's my OCD. I think it's Gladed. Quickly, in 2 seconds, what's the question?
Hi.
Is it Claudette with a T?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call.
In 2 seconds,
please. I just want to know, my mom has the title deed for the house. She's still alive, but she has a will, and we are three daughters, and she has left now the house to the three of us, equal share. But two of us live in different provinces, and one sister of mine lives in the house currently with her. So I want to know, what sort of claim will she have? Because she lives in the house with my mom, should my mom pass?
It won't be any greater. You'll be sharing it one-third each. And I don't think you have a problem. You see, having a will, and probably this is a good parting note, having a will sorts out a lot of these problems. Yeah. Because you don't have to ask who lives where. You just go straight to the will. If there's three daughters and it's one property, you each own 33.3% of that property, full stop. So you don't have to have a long-winded inquiry. I'm happy that we can help you in the seconds that we have. Advocate. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mike.
And then Dr. Bolt, thank you so much for joining us on Skype. We've really valued your input.
Thank you very much.
And Tanula, thank you so much. I hope to have you some more on the show. I thoroughly enjoyed having this discussion with you, and I enjoyed your insights.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, can we stalk you?
Sure.
All right, that's the Law Reports. We're back again next Wednesday. From me, Michael Bell, good night.
Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Visit kayafm.co.za for more.